This message comes from Capital One. Your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services backed by the strength of a top 10 commercial bank. Visit CapitalOne.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
On Sunday morning, England and Spain will face off in the Women's World Cup final. Both countries are playing in the women's final for the first time, and whether you'll be watching for the first time or a diehard soccer fan, we've got you covered. I'm Stephen Thompson, and on this episode of NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, we are talking about the Women's World Cup.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR. This message comes from the Kresge Foundation. Established 100 years ago, the Kresge Foundation works to expand equity and opportunity in cities across America. A century of impact, a future of opportunity. More at kresge.org.
What does it mean to be Black in America? In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, a collection of stories as varied, nuanced, and dynamic as Black experiences, you'll hear, it means everything. Search NPR Black Stories, Black Truths wherever you get your podcast.
Joining me today is Jasmine Garzd, NPR's criminal justice correspondent and host of the podcast, The Last Cup. Welcome, Jasmine.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, it is such a pleasure. Also with us is Daisy Rosario, senior supervising producer of audio at Slate. Hey, Daisy.
Hey, Stephen. So excited to be here.
It is great to have you both. So for those who don't follow soccer closely, until this year, the U.S. women's national team had never finished worse than third in an official Women's World Cup tournament. But earlier this month, in a game that went to penalty kicks, the U.S. lost to Sweden in the round of 16. That loss helped usher in some new powers for this year's final. Spain, which beat Sweden earlier this week, and England, which just beat co-host country Australia. Neither Spain nor England has ever played in a Women's World Cup final until now. That final game will air live in the U.S. on Sunday at 6 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 a.m. Pacific. It'll be live on Fox and streaming on Peacock in Spanish. Daisy, I'm going to start with you. Mm-hmm. What are you excited to watch for in the Women's World Cup final?
Oh, man. I love the Women's World Cup, and the more access I have to women's sports, I have to say the less I watch men. It's just true. Like, I did kind of like a preview episode of the Women's World Cup for The Waves. It's a show we have over at Slate, and I'm the friend that my friends text and ask, what should I know? So kind of helping give you that information. I mean, I'm excited to watch the final. I wish I could say I was more excited about the two teams that made it there. I think, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people share the sentiment of like, England and Spain, really? That's a tough one to root for. Because let's be real, like, you know, even if you don't like nationalism generally, like the whole point of the World Cup is it's countries against each other. So it is kind of the fairest space to be like, all right, these two. So I am a little these two about the whole thing. But I'm excited that it is two teams that haven't been to the final. I'm excited that it's two countries that haven't made it to the final. And these are, you know, teams that have been incredible, not just in the tournament, but in the lead up to this tournament. I know we'll talk more about, you know, the women of Spain kind of standing up to their coach, who is still currently their coach, but also that, you know, the English women won a big championship last year. Like in general, the Lionesses were very, very much ones to watch going into this tournament. So I think just the sheer enthusiasm of having two countries that have not made it to a final that fought really, really hard, I think that's always exciting. And, you know, the English women, like the U.S. women, I think it's always a fun story when the women are so much better than the men's team. So that's a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm right there with Daisy. I think that You know, there were a lot of teams that I was super excited to watch. I mean, my heart was with Colombia, like 100%. Mm-hmm. It's just so historic for them to get this far. I thought their playing was just absolutely exceptional. And also, they played with so much joy. Even when they would miss a goal, they were smiling and they were happy. And it just felt like an ode to good soccer. So I was really sad to see them go. And there were other teams, you know, that were not Latin American, but that I just thought technique-wise, they were really interesting. I thought Australia was just fascinating to watch. France was like a machine. I mean, it was like watching a soccer machine. You know, I've been thinking a lot lately about, I myself am from Latin America, I'm from Argentina, and when I was a kid, I was forbidden from playing soccer. Mm. And to see women playing soccer at this level, I've just been thinking about how meaningful it is to me. I used to love playing soccer as a kid, and then around the time when, you know, I started developing, hitting puberty, I was told in no uncertain terms, you know, you can't do this anymore. And it was kind of the vibe in the 90s, you know, in Argentina in the 90s, women didn't play soccer, and a lot of times soccer games weren't a safe space for women. And so I've been thinking a lot about, like, no matter who wins on Sunday, I feel like we all kind of win, because it's just to see these women who have come this far and fans that are like supporting them rabidly. And even, you know, they're getting national recognition, like the Colombia team, even though they got left out, you know, the government has pledged to give them more money, you know, to sponsor them. And that's just really meaningful. So I do really think that no matter who wins, we kind of all win in this World Cup.
That does often seem to be the vibe with the Women's World Cup, where eventually you are just rooting to watch someone succeed. Some of that, I think, is like Olympic spirit kind of bleeding into this. Anytime you're kind of watching countries competing against other countries, it often winds up being in the spirit of peace and community. And you eventually are just watching, even if you don't have a strong rooting interest, you're just watching the triumph of the human spirit.
Yeah. I went to the last one. I went to France for the Women's World Cup in 2019. Just for fun, just because I wanted to. And it was like so much of that, so much of what we're talking about, that kind of that spirit. Like, there was obviously, like, you know, you saw all the people from the different countries, but there was such camaraderie in the fact that we were all celebrating women. There were so many parents from so many countries that had brought their young women who play, their daughters who were sometimes very young, sometimes teenagers, but you could see how much it meant to all of them to be there and how important being there was. And that aspect of the vibe was incredible, you know, to be in France last time wearing my American kit. Right? Like, and to have that much love coming my way.
Yeah. And I think also it was amazing and like to see like the kids celebrating it.
Yeah.
And also the older folk, like the old school. Like, I just told you the story about how, you know, when I was a kid, my dad was like, no, soccer is not a place for women. Right. Well, lo and behold, at some point at the beginning of this World Cup, I get like this frantic call from my father. And he's like, I need your password. I need to see the World Cup. And it was this moment of, oh, my dad, like the oldest school, old school soccer guy, is watching this. That was something.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Daisy alluded to this a little bit, and I wanted to dig into this a little bit more. Like, what is the basis for your rooting interests once your home country is knocked out? Because I think anybody who's ever watched a sports tournament where, like, there's a whole bunch of teams and you've only got one and your team wets the bed, and all of a sudden you have to have opinions on complex geopolitical balance.
Yes, my God. Yeah.
In the round of 16, my partner and I were watching some games, and the basis was if one team's country had colonized the other team's country.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Right.
Which there were three different games where you could root between The Netherlands and South Africa. You could root between France and Morocco.
Right.
And you could root between England and Nigeria.
Yes. It's like
and
very complex geopolitical strategy.
So complex, yeah.
And so we were like, we were rooting for the colonizees right. against the colonizers. Went 0 for 3 in those games.
And part of why I say that England and Spain is a rough final. Like,
it is.
It's like, it and is. I think that would also be true if it was just like the fact that it's two European countries in general. I think, right. you know, and this is also true in the Men's World Cup. Like, you know, we hope that the teams playing against each other end up being from different continents just to like spread mm-hmm. it out. It's kind of not as much fun in general when it's like two places that are already close to each other.
Right.
I mean, I feel like in some ways it is also like the Olympics and the fact that like, you kind of get pulled in by some of the stories. I think it very much depends on probably what your awareness is of different actual teams. And, you know, when I see that Spain is there, and look, I'm not going to overthink the colonization of either in this instance, right? Like, woof. But yeah, every time I go to Spain, people get very excited to tell me about Christopher Columbus, like literally every time I meet people who go like, you know, we were the ones who sent him. And I'm like, "That this is, I hate this conversation.
You don't want to brag about that.
No. And so did I think about that going into this final? And I was like, yeah, they're both ones that are rough. But I was like, yeah, at least when I go to England, people don't excitedly tell me about Christopher Columbus. So did that factor into me rooting for England? Absolutely.
How about you, Jasmine?
Yeah, I mean, I'll always root for Argentina first, and then I'll root for Latin America next. I think there is something about, you know, when we were talking about the joy of these women playing, for a lot of them, this isn't something they can do as a full-time job. And there was this one Colombian player that I was reading about how she works in a bank and she took time off to do this. Those kind of stories really capture my heart. It does get complicated when it's two, you know, imperial powers like Spain and England, who also has kind of a history with Argentina. But, you know, I think the added level of complexity is that a lot of these European teams, and you see this a ton in men's soccer too, the players, their star players are the children of immigrants or of formerly colonized nations, you know? Yeah. I think on this occasion, I'm going to root for Spain. For two reasons. They have this player, Salma Parayuelo. Her mom is from Equatorial Guinea. And when Salma Parayuelo steps onto the field, it's just, it's magic. She's unstoppable. I can't keep my eyes off her, but I also, she's so fast, it's hard to keep my eyes on her. And I also have to say, I haven't loved the style of the British team in terms of just a lot of fouling as a strategy, it feels. I don't know. I'm kind of not down with that. Like, it's just a lot of fouling as a strategy, it feels. And I don't really like that.
There also is the narrative with the Spain team that I think some other, you know, fans like me do get concerned with. You want to root for the players. But structurally, there is a concern that if they win, it will be kind of rewarding abuse. And that part of it is very difficult. So there's a big story going on, or has been going on for a while now, with the Spanish national team. They had 15 players last year come out against the coach. The coach is a man named Jorge Vilda. Now, this is the current coach of the women's national team for Spain. They came out against this coach last year. The federation stood behind the coach. Of the 15 women who came forward, three of them are currently playing in the World Cup. So the federation stood behind him in this abuse. And so a lot of people are, of course, saying things that like, well, the, you know, obviously it was good that we stood behind him. Look, he got them to the final. You don't want the players to be any more punished for that. But it definitely, I think kind of the same way that you saw a lot of people obviously attacking the U.S. women's national team for not making it as far after being so outspoken. There is a feeling amongst, I think, a lot of people who do follow the women's teams closely that if they win, it kind of justifies the federation standing behind him. And so as I joke, obviously, about the Christopher Columbus stuff, which really does get under my skin when I'm there. But, you know, for me, a big part of the actual like narrative of how these power plays play out on the field and for the players in terms of their teams and how well they are cared for and respected is, do we want the ends to justify the means, essentially. And so for me, totally. that's a big part of why I'm also not rooting for Spain, even though I want all of their players to be happy and do well.
It's interesting. You know, when I was in Argentina last year reporting on the World Cup, and I spoke to a lot of really like old head coaches about this, you know, multi-million dollar industry that is soccer in Argentina, right? And a lot of them were like, the future of soccer is women. I mean, I kept hearing that over and over again. But then I spoke to, you know, many feminists and all other people in the world of soccer who were saying, okay, cool, but what are we replicating? I mean, is this... Right. Because the soccer machinery, the soccer industry... In the whole world, it has a very dark underbelly. It breaks as much more dreams than it makes. Oh, yeah. It can be very exploitative. You know, for every Messi, there are a gazillion kids who don't make it and their lives get really torn apart. And I think there is a really valuable question as women's soccer is advancing. There's this valuable question of what do we not want to replicate here?
Sure.
Yeah.
Watching people at the pinnacle of their sport succeeding is really, really fun. And it's tough because obviously, you know, we can get wrapped up at any time in the tragic underbelly of everything. And it's just tough. It's like you also want to give yourself permission to experience joy and to revel in other people's joy. Striking that balance is kind of a constant struggle. I did want to ask you guys, we've mentioned a couple times that the U.S. got knocked out early in the round of 16 by Sweden, and the U.S. had never been left out of the quarterfinal. They got knocked out in the round of 16. It was a crushing blow.
Yeah.
What do you make of that happening? Why do you think it happened? And I mean, it was Megan Rapinoe's last game. Do you think it like marks the end of a certain era in U.S. women's soccer? Is it the beginning of a new era? What do you make of what has happened with the U.S. team?
I mean, I would say for me, frankly, I was expecting this. I wasn't necessarily expecting them to go out in the round of 16, but I think my sincere hope was that they would even make it to the quarterfinals this year. I know that obviously, like, they're incredible. They have such an amazing record, you know, 4 wins, never making it less than 3rd place until now. But I do pay attention to a lot of it internationally. And like, there's been a couple of things that have just been true for a while. One, other teams are getting better. Other countries had started investing. I mean, a huge part of why our women were so good was, you know, we got this like head start. We got this like Title IX head start. Yeah. It's too complicated to go into like right this second, but you know, there's also a lot of those players that are international players that play other places. They come to college here in the U.S. Like, we have an infrastructure that kind of got built up over time that has helped make our women good. But there are women that come from all over the world now who, you know, take part in that. So the rest of the countries are getting better all the time. I also knew that going into this, I felt like it was just going to be a transitional time because of the amount of roster change that we had, right? So like between 2015 and 2019, fewer than half of the players changed. So that means like the majority of the team that was playing in 2019 had been playing together for a while. Going into this, more than half were new. So more than half were like playing in their first World Cup ever and also had only been playing together as a team for like a year. And let's not forget, playing as the national team is something that they do in these kind of like pockets. And then they still have to go play for their pro league here in the States or a pro league in another country. And so I felt already, as someone who's like a really intense fan, that there was a lot of eyes on us right at the time that we were going to be transitional.
Yeah.
I will be much more disappointed if in 4 years we don't make it a little bit further because we have some incredible people that are still young or just joined the team. And once they've actually had time together, I expect them to be great. And then we have some people like Rose Lavelle who should still be there in 4 years and like still be great. So as frustrating as it was, there was a lot of, I think, people looking at their history and assuming it would continue and not really understanding the way that the game was changing in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Daisy said is spot on. I think, you know, as a soccer lover, one of my pet peeves is people who give these really vitriolic opinions once every couple of years when there's a World Cup, but they don't follow the teams throughout. I know there was a lot of talk of patriotism and nationalism, and if we're talking about that, I can't think of something less patriotic than kicking your own people when they're down. I think that the U.S. has a stellar record, and you can't win every single time. It just wasn't the one for us. And I do think that if you love soccer, you love to see the whole level, you know, all the other teams getting better. This is kind of like the saying, what is it? A rising tide lifts all the boats.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, I love soccer. It pained me to see, I don't know, my team, Argentina, be out early on. But I just seeing the Colombian team play, seeing the French team play, seeing Australia play, seeing all these teams that have gotten to this level. And something amazing about this World Cup is the finalists, they've never been this far before. And that speaks to me of a rising level of quality. And I think we can all be really happy about that because, you know, it gets boring to always be, you know, the best team, the best player. Like, trust me, I'm watching MLS right now. At some point, I'm going to get bored, you know, of watching Messi snack.
Yeah.
And the U.S. can definitely say that they paved the way. Like, you know, I think when I was a kid, I didn't even know women could play soccer professionally. It was not within the realm of my imagination. And I remember the first time I saw, you know, a professional women's soccer, the first time I became conscious of it was actually the U.S. And to me, you know, part of being someone who paves the way is also not being the gatekeeper and knowing when, like, you can step aside with humility and be like, it's time for someone else to win. But again, I think a lot of the vitriol was also coming from people who don't actually care about soccer.
No.
I agree.
Or women's sports or women.
Right.
All right. Well, we want to know what you think about this year's World Cup so far. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Jasmine Garst, Daisy Rosario, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
This was so much fun.
Also, make sure to listen to The Last Cup. It follows Argentina's journey to the Men's World Cup. It's hosted by our pal Jasmine. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts. This episode was produced by Mike Katzeff and edited by Jessica Reedy. And Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Stephen Thompson, and we will see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Viore, a new perspective on performance apparel. Clothing designed with premium fabrics, built to move in, styled for life. For 20% off your first purchase, go to viore.com/NPR. This message comes from NPR sponsor Rosetta Stone, an expert in language learning for 30 years. Right now, NPR listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership to 25 different languages for 50% off. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
This election season, you can expect to hear a lot of news, some of it meaningful, much of it not. Give the Up First podcast 15 minutes, sometimes a little less, and we'll help you sort it out. What's going on around the world and at home? 3 stories, 15 minutes, Up First every day. Listen every morning, wherever you get your podcasts.